This week on RSBNB Update, Dead and Buried rewards us next week with Dynaro Enhancement and returns Zamarigle to the fore of RuneScape lore. The lore diggers are here with a complete history of Zamarigle from 2008 through the 6th Age to today. What's next for him? This is RSBNB Update, episode 943, recorded Thursday, July 13th, 2023. I am amazing. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. We got big news this week when it comes to looking at the finale, as it's been told, of the Fort 4 and 3 season, Dead and Buried. We're going to talk a little bit about that, a little bit about Necromancy's story, as Necromancy is getting closer and closer to release on August 7th. And to do that, we're going to have a look at one of the key characters in this upcoming quest, Zamarigle. We're here to do one of our Lore Diggers segments, and to cover that this week, Tanis, you're here, you are each and every week. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us is Questcaping, resident lore person and quester here at Update.
Hello, hello, hello there.
And also joining us new to the podcast is Avernick. Welcome aboard.
Thank you for having me.
You might have heard of Avernick before from various areas around the RuneScape lore community, in particular when it comes to a number. I think you said you got a number of world firsts for archaeology, mysteries, and whatnot, right?
For Orthyn and Sentist, and I kind of led the main mystery, so the ones that ended the story through.
Nice. And, you know, we were getting to know each other a little bit in pre-show, and like, you know, your name sounds familiar. I feel like we worked on stuff before, but you actually submitted the winning entry for the arc in the Rune Labs area expansion back in the day, too.
Yeah, kind of on a whim. I just wanted to get involved in the whole player power poll submission thing, and it did quite well.
Yeah, and you know, I think the arc turned out to be one of the most visually expansive areas that they've ever done in the game. It had its own slew of mini quests and provided some different skilling things too. And I always hear from people that say we'd like to see the rest of the Eastern Lands added into game, but I don't know if there's any plan or for that in the future, or if that's too far away. But the arc was definitely a fun area to go through. So kudos to you for mentioning
that. Yeah, it's absolutely exciting.
But before we get too far down the path, though, I do need to issue a big thank you to some folks, because you guys might remember that on last week's episode of Update, we unveiled what was called the RSBNB Update Experience tier, and you guys have just jumped on that. It was a limited time offering. There's one slot left. It's on patreon.com/RSBNB. But this week, I'd like to thank Andrew C., Drama Free, Jason S., Jesse W., Keski, Maniac RS, Ricky A., Rippeth, and the Naked Captain as being part of our RSBNB Update Experience tier members who just enabled this show to go forward. So a big, big, huge thank you goes out to you guys. So round of applause to them. But we're going to dive right in. You can follow along. Full show notes available at update.show. You can find me in-game at chain12088. Tanis is at Tanis79. Questcaping is Questcaping, and I assume you're Avernick in-game, yeah?
Yep.
Right on.
No numbers.
Fair enough. And, of course, we also have our Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord, and the Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, as well. So, beginning with this, Dead and Buried, the Fort 4 and 3 season finale, launching on July 17th. We're not going to go too far into what we're expecting from the lore on this quest. We're going to save that for next week. But we do want to talk a little bit briefly about one of the rewards for the quest that they unveiled this week, and that's the Ranger's Workroom, the final area expansion for the fort. How do you guys feel about this at first glance?
We're there, right? I think the final touches was Woodcutter's Grove, and it's hard to talk about it being such a it's hard to talk about it scaling it has skilling. It's but more of a headquarters type.
It's like a skilling, you know, hub, like, feel. Like,
it's almost a hub, but it's you can, you know, I don't know what you call it, right? Because you just have access to all of the stuff that you do, like, all, you know, and so it's more of a command center.
Despite having the command center building. Averneck, Questcaping, you guys have any early thoughts on this? You guys big fans of fletching?
It exists. That's my general thought.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think the numbers are anything to write home about as far as the increases to production. One of my favorite AFK activities is actually doing the care styling zygomite
thing,
which I guess funnels into this, but it's not like the same like AFK, I can do this while I'm doing whatever else sort of thing. So,
right.
If I make arrows, sure, but I don't find myself making arrows or bows often. I mostly just grab the pieces of zygomite air and sell them for quite a profit because someone else is doing it.
And that's been one of the things that has been talked about with this, about whether or not that scratches that itch specifically for iron characters, because at tier one you get the fletching workbench, which you can use to make ammo, unstrung bows, and then ultimately string them. It gives you 2% chance to save resources when fletching, and a 1% chance to get an extra bundle of arrow shafts, including elder arrow shafts, which does not include the tempered fungal shafts made through zygomite care styling. Tier 2, that increases to a 2% chance on the strung bows when fletching unstrung, and a 1% chance for an extra bundle of arrows. Then at Tier 3, this is the big one, the Wisdom of Anima perks. There's 4 of these, one for each Elder God arrow type. And having the perk unlocks allows you to imbue the Dine Arrows into Elder God Arrows of that type at a much faster rate at the cost of the XP gain on that. So with this, it brings imbuing those Dine Arrows down from 4.2 seconds or 7 ticks to 1.2 seconds, which is 2 ticks for 15 arrows. And imbuing the arrows will now use 1 anima per arrow instead of 3, and token experience is 1% of the original XP. So it's a flat up nerf to the XP that you would get for making these Dine Arrows. And I think the discussion, and I've been in contact with some of our iron people like Iron Raxor and such about this, and they're on the fence about this, if this will make these Dine Arrows something that they can use for their high level ranged equipment, because, you know, that was one of the huge concerns about the Iron Man mode of this, is that, well, you know, we spend however many hours making all these Dine Arrows and then they just get sunk right away when you use them. So we're waiting to see if that's going to scratch that itch. And I mean, I don't know. Like, I personally don't know many people outside of the high tier PVM who are actually using the imbued arrows, let alone just the standard arrows on this. So, you know, much like with the Woodcutter's Grove and other fort buildings that had a clear use, I don't know if this one's going to land and have as big of an impact as those ones did. But it's just, it's not really speaking to us, Tanis, like the Woodcutter's Grove did, I don't think.
No. And I wish I could remember exactly what those XP rates were back when we did that episode. I don't think they're necessarily high enough to even draw, you know, the XP players, the people that's going to be fletching over there, compared to some of the methods.
Compared
we already
to people
have.
Who just want to make arrows, right?
Right. It may be interesting. If they had boosted that, and then with double XP coming up, you might have seen a spike in it. But I just, if I remember right, I don't think those were. Well, it's obviously not the highest, or it would be the meta.
Charging the arrows was 244,000 XP an hour. Making the actual arrows themselves, the headless Dine Arrows plus sharp shell shards, was about 600K an hour. So.
So imbuing
the arrows is the one that's being changed here. So that's going, and but that's not the bulk of the XP because that was
but
the
that's
240.
That's not the bulk. Yes,
that's not the bulk of the XP. No.
Yeah.
And it's a time question of making everything else that factors into it too. As in, you know, the imbuing takes a while, but I don't think that's the huge bottleneck for this. Looking back at the production flow on this. Evernick, you said you do the care styling and whatnot there. Is that something you still do or
it's pretty much my default yak track activity for skill and kill. Which I feel like this doesn't affect too much because I have to be there, not here.
Yeah.
I'm curious what this will do to the price of things. I felt like I've met a couple dozen mil here or there, like doing a couple yak track tasks. So it was worthwhile-ish, especially because I'm going for like the pets or whatnot. But I'm curious what this does to the economy. Like I get that there's a big Iron Man push for making the production of these arrows better, but there's also the main side of it where does reducing the ammo required per arrow drive the price down up something for the base components that aren't the anima? I don't know.
Yeah. Because from what I understand it, the anima that's the most difficult to get, and this makes sense because Krosis is the big anima, everything else can be farmed relatively easily. And the Bic arrows are being used on things like Ambassador, Glacier at high end rages, and Hard Mode Carapac. And I think that's the use cases for the Bic arrows. And you expand those out, maybe this has an impact on it, but maybe it doesn't. But I think the way to truly scratch this itch is to just have a balance pass again over everything at the accidental skilling update and see if it's where it needs to be a year later with the people who are using it. And maybe that's what'll come from this in some form of Ninja Strike later on. So, but in any case, more on that next week. I guess I should ask before we go on to this, or if we want to save this for the Zamarigal segment. Are we happy with the length of this Fort 4 and 3 season now that we see that this is concluding right before Necromancy? Because this was, what, February to August here? Or July?
I think it works out, honestly.
6 months.
Yeah, I do too.
6 months.
Yeah, I think it's been a slow start, but I think it's been talked about a little bit that the Dead and Buried will be a requirement for some things going forward. So,
yeah,
not the end of the overall story, but like this, like, first segment of this is where you establish your fort and make it like a mainstay in Mystical, and it feels pretty it feels like a part of the world. I don't think it even took that long to start feeling like a part of the world.
No.
Like by Murder on the Border, like we belong here, but now it feels like we're facing our own little issues here and there. So
we have something that's actually pretty established by this point. Mm-hmm. We have sort of a new identity as the player character. We're no longer the World Guardian, but instead we get to be the Duke/Duchess/Dux of 4 and 3. And that is something, it's a strong position within the world, and it's something we can start anew from, and it's something we can really go into the next storyline from. We have a really firm position now, and honestly, I think we're at a stage here that we weren't at the end of the Zamorakian Civil War arc, because that sort of shuffled around the pieces in the outside world, but we sort of remained the same.
We were just an observer in that, pretty much.
But here, we have an impact on this world.
You remember when we were here to discuss, it was either Murder on the Border, the one before that, Questscaping? We said that the quest was good from a structural standpoint, but my main criticism of it is that it didn't move the storyline forward.
Yes, that would have been Murder on the Border. That was just a familiarization with the characters, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And here we are moving towards that. So
yeah,
definitely.
And we can take what we've learned and move forward with it.
Definitely looking forward to next week on that.
Yeah.
All right. Soldai. Graphical rework prototypes are in the news post this week of what they're going to be going with. It doesn't burn your eyes out. It's not just a simple green reskin of the Aurora Winter Dye anymore. They're still working on what to do behind the scenes to plug everything in. on this, and they expect to release the updated version of this die on July 17th. And as such, they're also extending Parcels from the Dead by 1 week to July 24th, so people can get more of those last wills and have more chances at getting the soul die. What do you guys think of what we have here in the news post for the variant they went with?
It looks cooler. I feel like it's less soul die-y and more of
more traditional die.
Yeah, it actually kind of like removes a lot of color from the armor, which looks pretty cool. I'm not gonna say that I'm gonna own one anytime soon. I'm not really a player that has a lot of tier 90, tier 92 equipment that I'm dying all the time. But if I happen to get one, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, for me, like, I love green, and it was a question for me about, you know, what would this be used on, and is it worth using it on the die, or is it just, you know, worth investing in, dare I say it, PVM gear on that? We'll see how this looks when we start getting more screenshots in-game, but I have to say I'm a fan of what we have now compared to where we landed, and we'll have to, of course, wait and see what the wider die discussion is going to be, as we talked about a couple weeks back with Stormy on that, in terms of what that does for clue scrolls and whatnot. But I feel like we can tick this one off the list, that graphical changes have been made and done with this, and it works. And you know, Tanis, I don't think I asked you this when Soul Die came out. If looking at these GIFs here on the news post, what does this do for you with the current color blindness stuff you're looking at? This
doesn't do much. I'm green blue colorblind, so I don't to me it
you
looks
can't
blue.
See much. Okay. You can't see the difference between green and blue.
No, but the but it's funny because I was thinking the same thing with the updated, because I can tell the updated image, and I think it does look more like a traditional die, which actually I was thinking makes that discussion that we had all the more pertinent, right? Because when it's not that blazing saddles, freaking scorch your eyes out green, you know, I mean, it's easier to be like, yeah, you know. But now when it's more along in line with a traditional die, you're going, eh, okay, we definitely had it was a good discussion to have, because it's legit.
Yeah. I don't like
vibes a little better now, eh?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I want to use this, what I would use it on. Cause you know, going back a few weeks, remember I got one of these from my general last wills that I got in game. So
of
course. I mean, it's a question of use it or sell it at some point, but I don't know. We'll wait and see. On to patch notes for the week, and these are just general fixes. There's nothing really that's going to jump out at us in here, and you know, even less so with the fact that abyssal beasts are now less likely to move around you when you're in combat with them.
Woohoo.
Which I think is good. Might have extra benefits for people who want to chain a lot of them up and use cannons, so to speak. But we'll leave that as a topic for later, because I know how you feel about cannon, Stannis. No, he doesn't. players' walk animation overrides will no longer be disabled after squashing a grand seed pod. Remove the 13 defense requirement from a visit to Charlie, since 13 defense is no longer required to use fairy rings.
A little bit of pure proofing, eh?
I guess. I don't even know what a visit to Charlie is. I know it's an achievement. It's an achievement that requires the player to enter the Unicorn Pin in the Ardoyan Zoo by using the fairy rings.
Charlie being the zookeeper.
That's a task set one.
Okay. Yeah, we've heard a bit about Taskman before. Are you on the Taskman train too, Avernick?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
Recognize.
General Gryardar and Kriara's bodyguards now have a chance at dropping Warpriest armor pieces. I thought this was patched in years ago.
Well, and just those two, like presumably the others are fine.
Yeah, presumably the others, Zamorak and Ceridoman ones are fine. So
that's good though, because half the time when you're at those bosses, you're killing the bodyguards. So
yeah, and you know those bodyguards just die in an instant unless you're doing unless you're doing hard mode. You know, we're coming up to 16 years this August when the first God Wars dungeon was released, you guys.
Oof.
Wow. God Wars is almost old enough to vote.
So and they're still fighting.
And they're still fighting, yep.
fun little time capsule. Fixed an issue causing quest caves to activate the Stone of Jazz buff if a teleport to the Glacier Cavern was unsuccessful.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Oh, that sounds like it could be a bit abusable even, because that is a hefty damage buff.
Yeah. And what makes a teleport to the Glacier Cavern unsuccessful is my next question.
Maybe if you're teleblocked.
Oh.
Huh. That's weird.
But I mean, that
makes sense.
I mean, what player gets teleblocked in this day and age? Like, what? I mean,
someone who's abusing bugs.
I mean, somebody who's using PvP, I guess.
Does that imply that the game briefly thought you were in the Glacier Cavern, even if your teleport didn't work? Like, if you saw your character stay still, but the game thought you had gone there and not?
Yeah, that must be how teleports work. That would... Like, it must move, like, the player data point there first before moving your screen there, if that makes sense.
Right.
What teleport would go to that? I mean, always it's your fairy ring.
The quest gate.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, remember they added all the Master Quest teleports onto the Questscape?
No, I left mine at the cleaner, Shane. I thought it lately.
Oh, yeah. Right, forgot about that. Soul Wars avatars can no longer be killed using Death Touch darts?
Sure.
No more minigame gaming, I guess.
Yeah. That's just wild to me that somebody can go into Soul Wars or could have went into Soul Wars and used their collection of Death Touch darts on those.
Of all
wild
the places.
To me that someone reported it.
Yeah.
I play Soul Wars sometimes.
And? I was going to ask if you'd ever thought of, you know, if you've ever seen anything like this there.
No, certainly not. I'm playing like crappy little organized games, clan versus clan, not something where someone's gonna
everybody play by the rules, right?
Yeah, if someone's gonna use a Death Touch dart, they're gonna get kicked out.
Okay. Large numbers in the high score and music player interfaces will now come with a comma separator.
In the music player interface.
Yeah, I don't know where you would have that. I mean, I guess for the 1,000+ songs that we have, I think that's the only thing that comes to mind for that.
It's good readability.
The fishing spot under the bridge in Shiloh Village has been removed.
Why? What was it?
Was it even accessible?
No, it wasn't. It was just there. It was just there all the time, and it was not accessible.
Great content.
Cool. And then we move on to things related to the max cash update still. Attempting to empty your money pouch into an already full bank will now return the correct error message. Previously, a few weeks back, it would have disconnected you, so this is growth. Attempting to move items from your bank to a beast of burden that would trigger an error message will now display the correct error message. And the traveling merchant and fancy dress shop owner will now correctly display your true monetary worth when interacting with their respective stores. You gotta, of course, have the traveling merchant and fancy dress shop owner knowing exactly how much money you have.
Gotta flaunt it.
And then there was an issue with the unwelcome guests perks in the guardhouse that I wonder, speaking of bugs that were probably being abused, the execute chance for Slayer creatures was affecting certain bosses, and this is being corrected. These were bosses like Ol Sawtooth in the Temple of Amanishi. A huge selection of bosses in the Dragonkin Laboratory, but not the big key bosses. These are things like Varrak Little Sangri the Red and Alanagard the Black. Also the same thing for the Shadow Reef, including others such as Masuda the Descended, the Corpse Carrier, and Bossy McBossface, of course. And then in the Zamorak Undercity, we had Fred, the Cerberus Juveniles, the Denizens of Infernus, Smolders the Revengers, and Maelstrom, the Raging Waterfiend, were all being affected by this, where if you were on a Slayer task for those, it would have a chance to execute them.
Probably weren't flagged correctly as bosses then, hey?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I'm curious what Slayer creature they thought they were, because that perk works on Slayer creatures. So, like, what did it think Fred was?
Well, it's only... it only seemed to be affecting Elite Dungeons.
Yeah, like, a lot of those mini-bosses must have been flagged as some Slayer something.
Yeah, or just big NPCs that weren't necessarily bosses in that same regard, and then they were caught by that. Mm-hmm. So... Tanis, you strike me as someone who likes the smell of rich mahogany.
Yep.
The My Fort Smells of Rich Mahogany achievement is no longer appears to be locked in the achievements interface, and the tooltip has been updated to correctly list 60 construction as a requirement.
Okay. I mean, I've moved on to Elderwood now, but mahogany has a special place.
Yeah. You can no longer store noted items in a wood box. Modified wood spirits will now award the players with extra logs when the adds or related effects are used. And the Mkando hatchet now sheaths correctly, and the glow from the augmented version is now brighter and visible from all angles. Then one more, I think. When setting the quick teleport option in the Nature's Sentinel outfit to the Elder Tree and the Woodcutter's Grove, the chat message will no longer say, no quick teleport destination selected. And that's our patch notes for the week. And as you can tell, they're kind of... they're just fixes around the edges. They're not huge quality of life fixes. But they're appreciated nonetheless.
Decades in the making, apparently.
Yeah.
Good that they happened.
All right. We're right on track for where I thought we would be, where I thought we would be time-wise. We're going to discuss the necromancy insights in just a moment, but I want to thank our Patreon supporters this week for allowing us to do what we do here. And in particular, I'd like to thank Alfie S., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Big Huge Rat, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Keski, Ling 01, Maniac RS, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Nick G, Parnassius, Renhawk, Ricky A, Rippeth, RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Tabby, The Naked Captain, The Dabbin Goat, Tim, Tom V, Ukulele Steve, and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. Truly means the world to us. And in case you're wondering what we're talking about, you can head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb, and there we have four tiers to choose from, starting for as little as $1 a month. And with that, you gain access to an entire back catalog of monthly bits, which is our monthly bonus shows that we do. We most recently did one this month talking about our hypothetical archaeology mini sites. Where would we add archaeology mini sites? We talked about the city of Arpasandra, we talked about Crandor, and the clearing under Priv. So if any of those sound interesting to you, you want to hear a bit of a backstory about what we would have, what questions we would have the lore answer, what the relic powers would look like, you can sign up for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/rsbnb to gain access to that monthly bit and so many others. We also have a VIP tier, where for $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord, which includes a chat channel and high-quality stereo versions of the podcast, and a shout-out at the start of each and every month. For $5 a month, you can join the Insider tier, where you receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week, and you also gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And we also, as I was mentioning, do have the RSVNB update experience tier. There's only one slot left there of that, and that shows you're a premier RSVNB update supporter. You get an enhanced shout out, and you get some other little things like quarterly mail outs as well. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, just check us out at patreon.com/RSVNB. Thanks so much, everyone. It means the world to us. All right. How did you guys feel today when you saw that there's actually going to be a substantial story element to Necromancy, and we learned a little bit more about it?
Pretty glad that it's following in what's quite a tradition at this point, in that all of the skills newly released have been pretty story heavy. Like, I don't think anything's ever going to be as story heavy as archaeology, which is pretty much just story delivery, the skill. But also having something just really underpinning it lore wise along the way, is it's good to have a driving narrative, you know, something to keep you interested as you go, and not just a grind.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like the blueprint of a new story or new skill was set with archaeology, that it needed to be something that they needed to include something story related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like not only is it part of the general content delivery roadmap that they've been really pushing forward through the ongoing update cycle, it's also just, it's continuing the RuneScape story as a whole, because we have a big new update, we have a big new thing to deliver story through, and I'm interested to see how it happens, because Necromancy, it's going to be a weird skill. It's combat skill, hey?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, you pair those two together, that's not a normal pairing.
No, and it's not an obvious, like, story delivery mechanism, is it?
No. How do you feel, Avernick, with what we saw today and what we knew coming in?
Yeah, it feels like it's, like you said, it's like a evolution of the archaeology model. It feels like a lot more this time, a lot more attention is being put towards the meta story, whereas with archaeology, it was kind of like each of the sites had their story, but the meta story kind of fizzled off at the end with Writings at the Walls. But this one feels like beginning to end, they have a clear narrative in mind, and it's going to motivate and drive you through this skill, which I'm from starting with the combat skill, it's like, okay, you use this to fight things you've already fought before. So what's the engagement? And I feel like this is a large chunk of that, is this is the a lot of the new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I need to also underscore with this that when we got the details of this, Mod Raleigh said that, you know, there was going to be quests involved, and the immediate question went to, okay, is it quests? Is it archaeology mysteries? Is it mini quests? And we were talking a little bit before, and the question, I think, came to the answer that it's archaeology ministries. Ministries? Mysteries. Mysteries plus a little bit. So, and I'm wondering what the requirements are going to be on this, if we're going to be in a kind of a situation where we were with archaeology, where we weren't able to kind of go through all of them until we, you know, reach sufficient level, and if that's going to put a damper on covering that on the show. Because you remember, we really didn't get to dive into the story until about a month after the fact with archaeology here. So, I think that'd be okay if they did the same thing with Necromancy.
Or maybe we're in a Fight Club situation, hey?
Oh, you just had to mention Menophos, didn't you?
It's similar. Yeah, I mean, I think these quests are doing a couple of things as well, right? Like, I think they've talked about how the first couple are more tutorials, so there's that element to it, and the later ones are probably introducing the bosses, so there's, like, it is story, but I feel like it's also, like, a metric of progression through the skill, like, secondary to the skill level.
Your little milestones. Like
what quest are you on is what you can do in the skill. Yeah, milestones.
Because they did say that, you know, some of these quests will just unlock your weapon for you. So I'm wondering if these are going to be You go in and you do this quest. This is your tutorial, and away you go. And then that that accomplishes, or that knocks out, you know, just two or three of the quests along the way, right? At that early levels.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the expectation can't be nine. There are nine quests in service of a skill, right?
Yeah. So it's not going to be, you know, like nine, say, four and three level quests, probably. It's just going to be like nine archaeology mysteries plus a little bit around the edges. That's probably the best way.
Tempered expectations.
Yeah, that's probably the best way of looking at it. And I love that you said that, because I think setting the expectations right is what's going to make or break this for the entire community. Mm-hmm. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think in my mind, I'm going around like the arc mini quests is kind of like my benchmark for like that. That kind of like introduces some content and has some story around it. And there's a lot dropped at once, right? Like, this is the big thing to remember, is there's a lot dropped at once. So how much development time went into each one? So that kind of thing.
Definitely substantial enough to be satisfying. Mm-hmm.
I want to just quote from the news post here. So, and this underscores why I think it's going to be an interesting discussion. It says, the story of necromancy runs through the core of the skill at every level, from skilling rituals that are crucial to return souls back to their rightful place in the city of to your growth in necromantic power that leads you to a final showdown with Raziel, the first necromancer. So it is really painting it as that story that starts at the beginning and goes with you throughout that entire venture to 120. Mm-hmm. And then we learn go ahead, Questscaping.
It certainly makes it appeal more to me as a quester, because for your PVM types, there will be unlocks that drive it forward, just reaching the ability to do certain things more. But reaching story milestones will help drive it for the players like me, who are more of a minority, but I appreciate the thought.
Fair.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Everney.
I was going to say, yeah, definitely more of like, makes it more of a four quadrant update, right? Appeal to everyone.
And you know, at this point, you kind of need that with all the skills. You couldn't necessarily just put out something and have a launch that looked like divination at this point.
This is the moment.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just have a skill anymore. They are that important. Mm-hmm.
Like, ask yourself, how would we have seen divination differently if it had actually shipped with proper lore? How would we have seen invention differently if it would have shipped with proper lore? And, you know, despite those first few days of it.
and working XP rates and whatnot.
Exactly.
Well,
and cannons.
I think it's important with this, because it's... with introducing necromancy as a combat skill and as a thing in RS, this is like the world building around it, right? Like, they're doing it through quest, but they're really kind of giving it a foundation and a place so that it doesn't feel weird, or out of nowhere. Because, I mean, in the end, it's a combat skill, like you said. People are gonna, you know, they're gonna level it up regardless. But I just feel like this gives it a purpose. This is something that 2010 RS wouldn't have done. But it's actually thought out to be like, okay, we're dropping this. All of a sudden, the player can raise the dead. Huh. Yeah. We need to write some backstory to this.
Yeah. Samus, because it was you who was saying in the pre-show that the Elder God Wars, it made a significant point of saying, we are now raising soldiers from the dead to fight this war, and that's really bad.
Yeah.
So we need some story here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost playing catch-up, because with all those years of every other, and I have just combat skill, but it's just all that negative bias in the world. It's like, oh, necromancy's bad. We gotta figure out how we fit into that instead. So there's a lot of legwork to do.
Bit of PR, yeah.
Yeah, PR corrections.
Then we also have the characters who appear in this in Necromancy, who are characters from other areas in the game, specifically Malignius Mortifier.
Yes, he's a fun character to bring back because he really is just a guy bopping about Port Sarim, making mushrooms occasionally.
Right?
Yeah. No, he feels good as a tutorial character, which seems like it.
Mm-hmm. And then
he's
Ted.
Also someone who's been there forever, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Ted.
The skeleton. Definitely the goofy side of the skill, right?
Yeah. like, how many people are going to remember Ted and Crunchy from the front of the RuneScape page years ago?
Wasn't it Tim and Crunchy?
It was Tim and Crunchy.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Tim and Crunchy. So where's Ted from, then?
New, I think.
Okay. Well, maybe
a brother.
Maybe there's some relation there.
It's definitely going to be the brother or something like that. That's a very RuneScape-y thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. And then we're...
The T family, as opposed to, like, the Pete family, hey?
This is the ones with bodies.
And then we are known as the Last Apprentice.
Another title to collect.
That's a spoiler.
And, you know, with this, we start to learn about what this is going to be. We have to stop the last necromancer. We knew that already. Death is going to have a very prominent role as well involved in all this, which, I mean, makes sense, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's death endorsed necromancy.
And remember, it's consensual necromancy, they said.
Yep.
There's that angle, too. And they said death has tasked you with studying Raziel and even being trained directly by him in order to master the art of necromancy. So we start to see these relationships forming, and you can imagine that there's going to be some backstory and conversation amongst you and all the other characters as you move through this as well. So combine that with the quest, combine that with the wider lore ramifications. We start to realize that, you know, this is probably going to have a lore impact. I don't know if it's going to be as big as the archaeology lore impact was in terms of getting the entire world ready for the Elder God Wars, but it's definitely out there, isn't it? In terms of what it's going to, what the impact is going to be. And
I think it sounds a little more self-contained.
Yes,
even if precisely. We are working with massive concepts of death in RuneScape, it's also still within the underworld, hey?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely seems like the backstory would be quite global and spanning across history, right? This guy's been around forever, but also I feel like a big goal of narrative and a skill is to contain it to the skill, so you'd often rely on having done outside quests, or you'd often rely on doing the skill to then rely on, then do other quests. Both self-contained, but also like ingrained in the world, because otherwise it won't feel right.
It's a good balance, impactful and yet not too sprawling. Hey,
how do we feel about this? In that it's approaching world-ending territory. Elder God Wars was like universe-ending, but how do we feel about this? That, you know, if our character is not successful, it'll be world-ending. And I mean, obviously, we know it's a game; the world can't end. Right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to find a way there, but they bring us to the edge again. How do we feel about going that way?
I just made this comparison, and I think it works. It's like a Marvel movie. And this is like...
Oh, boy.
The movie about a specific, you know, character. This is Iron Man. Yes, you're always facing some kind of threat or whatever. Not the same, though, as a Thanos in an endgame, right? Like, it's just taken to, you know, such a high extent when it comes to, you know, those kinds of, you know, endgame and, you know, stuff like that, where the single little one-off, you know, character movies, same kind of thing, but you're not worried about the whole, you know, half of the universe population.
Yeah.
Disappear.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, the reason I asked this is I was discussing this with Sirion earlier, and he said, okay, so we're learning a little bit about the way we're going with this. Does it have to be raising these stakes again? I thought we were trying to get away from that to do more contained storylines in the game.
I imagine to some people it could feel hypocritical, hey? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I think on one hand, like, Necromancy's been in development for a while, so it has maybe a year and a half ago, like, setting this as the goal was, like, made a bit more sense. Whereas, obviously, where we are currently in the 4-4 and 3 stuff is not so much there. But also, I feel like this is all launching on one day. So, yeah, it's raising the stakes, but also it's dealing with the stakes in the same day, despite whenever you get to it. So it's not like it's like leading you on that it's going to get bigger and bigger.
Right.
Start and end. So, yeah, obviously nothing's going to change while you're doing this content. All of it's out.
Yeah, no, I mean, and think about this. Like, okay, yeah, self-contained, smaller stories, and we were getting that with Quest. I was expecting that with Quest. 4 and 3 is a good example of that. But this is a new skill. This is about as big as it gets in RuneScape. And so, would we be happy if you introduced a new skill by telling a story about Farrakh? I don't know.
This like, is your blog.
I feel like it was escalated because it needed to be. There's more gravitas with this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe at the end of the day, this is the natural conclusion. It's going to be like the second half of that arc. Because remember, at the start of the year, they said this is going to be effectively a year-long story broken into two bits. The first bit is Fort 4 and 3, and we obviously learned later that the second bit is Necromancy. And then after that, I'm wondering if we, you know, change gears again and focus on a different part of the world and a different storyline angle. Because I feel like the pivot to Necromancy was pretty much written on the wall, like you were saying, Questscaping, since the Zekar front, pretty much.
Hmm.
With their necro raising of the armies and such. So
I just can anyone have any ideas why did they leave the desert god of the dead out? Like they're just like, eh. Like he doesn't exist. I mean, did he get canceled?
Maybe he'll be in it. I mean, I don't think anything in the suggested requirements for the skill they've put out has really indicated as much. But
he's Death's big buddy,
right? I mean, he's the other Death God, and he's nothing to do with necromancy.
I saw this great meme going about. Saw this great meme going about, you know, the I consent, I don't. Just you as your world guardian palling up with this last necromancer, and Ixlaren's there saying, I don't.
You got to start sharing these lore memes. They're funny.
See if I can find it.
One more thing before we move on to Zemeregal. They talk about in the idea of classical necromancy is that it's raising the dead and controlling them to do their bidding. And they say, well, some necromancers do embody this variety. Necromancy is really about the movement and transfer of energy from one place to another. And this causes changes in the way energies form, similar to how magic channels through the elements to make heat or light. So with this, then they say, this is how we get necrotic energy, which of course, is used through your main hand weapon known as the siphon. Of course, not to be confused with the Elder God artifact, the siphon. Then there's underworld energy, which can be identified by its cyan or green color, and this is channeled through the conduit such as your spirit lantern. It's used then to conjure the denizens of the afterlife to aid you in battle. So there's the purple versus green cyan angle on this and what each of them symbolize going forward. So that's something we'll undoubtedly have etched into our minds as we move through the city of and through necromancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that necrotic description honestly feels a little too abstracted. I feel like you could say that similarly about divination, runecrafting, and magic.
Yeah.
Because the point it's missing is that it's the transfer of energy between like bodies or beings or something like that. But I feel like it's also just a very justifying, like, this is okay. We can do this. This isn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Quest Caping, for that.
There we go.
I'm showing this on the video version for folks who are watching on YouTube. If you're not, the meme says the myth of consensual necromancy. Shows a character. I don't know who the one in the middle is, but they both say, I consent. And like you said, Ichlerin, off to the right, I don't. Is there somebody you forgot to ask?
Quality content.
Oh, let's just end the show right here then.
That's it all, folks.
No, we're not. I brought you guys together here to discuss Zamerigal. And, you know, to be fair, Questscaping, you brought Avernick. So thank you for suggesting Avernick for the show. I'm glad that you're here. But let's talk a little bit about Zamerigal, because I felt like we needed to do this going into Dead and Buried next week. But you ask me about Zamerigal, I know he's a Zamoraki, a necromancer, a Majorat, and I don't know much else beyond that. So that's why I asked you guys here to fill us in on some of these questions, in particular about what Zamerigal has been up to and, you know, what we might expect for him as we head into Dead and Buried next week. So the way we're going to do this is we're going to start with a basic overview of Zamerigal's history, talk about his connection to RuneScape Necromancers, which is, of course, very important given where we're going in a few weeks, and then do a deep dive into pretty much everything we know or can think of about Zamerigal's past in RS and potentially where we could be heading in Dead and Buried with him. So, Questscaping, do you want to start us off? And Avernick, Tanis, you guys just feel free to jump in whenever you want here.
Absolutely. Right. So, Zamerigal, he is he's been a RuneScape villain for quite a while, introduced in Defender of Varrok way back in 2008, way back when RuneScape was just really ramping up its story. This was a little before Wild Gothic sleeps in the grand scheme of lore things, so we're having our build-up to Lucian and stuff, all our Stone of Jazz, Staff of Armadil. He's that sort of era. Mm-hmm. So the way he's been depicted has varied quite a bit over time. He sort of started off as this legendary villain, the Scourge of Varrok, fought off bravely by the legendary hero Arav, and has sort of varied from time to time to a sort of meme Skeletor, practicing his speeches in the mirror and whatnot. He's a Majorat. So you may know your Majorat, your Sliske, your Lucian, Zamorak back in the day. He's a semi-godlike being, functionally immortal. He's been around for quite a while, you know, a few thousand years, give or take. He is aligned with Zamorak, and that comes with caveats. He's a bit of an independent type and a bit hot-headed. We've seen him at times sort of grumbling and grousing, not being too happy about his lot. He's also, sometimes, a bit of an idiot. Has a habit of charging into situations unprepared and can pay the price. He also has a single-minded obsession with taking over Varrok. He's tried at least twice, one way back in the day, and one more recently that we fight off in the process of, well, doing our quests. And there's also an alternate universe in which he did take over Varrok. You might know it from the Dimension of Disaster special quest.
Yeah, that was the 200th quest, I was going to say. Always yes, interesting to look into that, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely an alternate timeline, but there's some interesting lore stuff if you dig in. Also some... It's definitely where the meme Skeletor portrayal comes from. That's what I'll say about that.
Yeah.
But yes, he has a few characters surrounding him. So he's got his long-suffering gargoyle minion named Sheriff Tick, which is quite a name. Hey, I always want to say Shark Teeth.
Yeah, you know, kind of looking at it, you're right. Shark Teeth is the way you would put that.
That guy.
I wouldn't try to pronounce it if I didn't have to.
No.
Yep.
No.
That one. The gargoyle. The rocky guy. All right. And he also has a long-standing enemy / enslaved zombie for quite a while, who is Arav, hero of Varrok. You may recognize him from everyone's classic RuneScape quest you had to find a buddy for, Shield of Arav, back in the day. And up until Ritual of the Marjorat, he was held in Zimmer Eagle's service. This is no longer the case. Arav has well and truly crumbled to dust. He had quite the run in this series of quests, so he's probably out of the picture in this day and age. Any questions so far?
No, I think that's important to lay all this down, because what we've effectively gone through, I think, is a history of pre-Sixth Age quests dealing with Marjorat outside of the Zerosian side. Would you say that's a fair assessment on that?
Absolutely, yeah. Because he comes from a side of lore that is not particularly Sixth Age threatening the world,
yeah,
etc.
Yeah.
It's threatening one very specific city, and one we all grew up in as noobs, feeding the stray dogs to boot.
And you got to wonder, you know, I'm sure we'll talk more about this after, at the tail end of the segment, is he going to try again? Probably.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think also importantly, like, you've already described one villain arc. This is his first villain arc. There's more.
They keep going.
So, like, he's definitely recurring.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're here in 2023. He's getting his time in the sun. I think it was foreshadowed, and was it foreshadowed, or was it explicitly told in that succession cutscene? I don't remember if it was told that it was going to be Zamarigal there, or if it was just foreshadowed.
Hmm.
If it was going to be Zamarigal specifically for Grimfree?
Yeah, for the villain. Yeah.
I don't think specifically like him. I think just the whole Rogues Gallery was set up as who will you see next?
Okay.
And then we ended up with this one.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think, like we said, the biggest thing to take out of this is the Zamorakian side of the Marjorat pre-Sixth Age that we've just outlined. And it's interesting when you put it all on the table, like you said, quest caving, it's a different angle than the Zerosian stuff, right? Whereas the Zerosian stuff, I feel, was more shadowy behind the scenes, focused on the ritual. You said he has had his own specific focus of taking over Varrok here in numerous incarnations.
Yeah. Zimmer Eagle doesn't really work from the shadows. Zimmer Eagle is sort of, he's very open about what he's up to. He's barefaced. You generally can tell he's got a big old army of zombies with him. It's big military forces as opposed to like working from the Shadow Realm, perhaps.
All right. So then where do we go from there is my next question on this, because I feel like we've covered pre-Sixth Age here. I think we have to have a conversation about his connection to other RuneScape necromancers at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because Zimmer Eagle's approach to necromancy, we have quite a few Marjorat necromancers, Sliske being like the other prominent one. But Sliske's thing is whites, which is more a case of having specific notable beings who are really, really powerful, like the Barrows brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But that is definitely not Zimmer Eagle's approach. Zimmer Eagle,
Arav, I feel.
Yeah.
Probably closer.
Arav is a special case, it seems. Special guy. Zimmer Eagle's approach is more just absolute hordes of armored zombies and completely brainless, brain dead. Not really useful for much more than charging on cities in massive numbers. And you can train on them en masse. Remember the old armored zombies training back in the day, eh?
That used to be very popular.
You can thank Zimmer Eagle for that.
Are those still used post-EOC, Tannis, do you know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Really?
I swear I've heard something about training up your invention stuff. On
the- oh, yeah.
Wow. Someone hasn't been paying enough attention to them, so they should probably be balanced if they're still used.
All right.
Mm-hmm. So it also happens to have been mentioned way back in Azanadra's quest back in 2021 that Zemeregal uses a black stone for necromancy. I think we've actually seen it too in Ritual of Marjorah. I think we stole it in Curse of Arav. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
I think we break it in Ritual of Marjorah. That's how we
lose it,
control of Arav.
Yes. Yeah, so that is what he relies on as a sort of focus for his necromancy. And that is a bit of a red flag, honestly, because black stone has bad connotations in RuneScape.
No, really?
Okay, for the folks who aren't initiated and experienced with ED3 and everything, Curse of the Black Stone, why is it such a red flag?
So, have you heard about our Lord and Savior Zaltak?
Yeah, that was a very mythical creature that people wanted for a long time to turn up.
Oh yeah, we're thinking big Rye the Eldritch dude, like big grabby blackstone hands. It's bad news, basically. You know the Ambassador? Don't be like the Ambassador. Don't go summoning Eldritch gods now. Really bad course of action. And suffice to say, Blackstone, that's that sort of genre of thing. Best to stay away from it. Meanwhile, our boy Zemeregal, not the brightest in the bunch. He thought it was obsidian, apparently.
It's almost insane how he seems to use it a decent amount and hasn't gone mad. I don't know if it's being dense or whatnot, but it feels like anyone else that uses it tends to feel consequences pretty soon after madness and hearing voices and serving the dark gods out attack or whatnot.
Warping into some wild entity.
Zemeregal's just kind of doing it. He's just having a good time.
He's just stupid enough for his own good, hey?
but they're not Majorat though, right? I mean, so...
Fair enough. We haven't really seen Majorat with Blackstone. He is kind of basically a god, so...
And that's a really scary connotation when you combine those things together.
Ooh, true.
Yeah.
Do you want to mention the thing you picked up from Azanadra's quest now, or do you want to save that for later? Because you briefly touched on it. Do you want to go into that more now or later?
I think let's save that for later.
Okay. So it's at this point, I think it would be wise of us to just go in a little bit deeper into everything that we know about Zemeregal in preparation for next week. This has been the kind of top level overview that we see here. I guess I'll ask you, Tanis, any questions before we move on to the more deep stuff now that we got the basics out of the way?
No, this stuff I remember. I played good. Through. And, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I want to just take everybody back. I feel like it was 2016 when we were... When were we looking at the final pirate quest?
Ooh, it feels like that was 2017.
Okay, it's 2017.
Yeah.
Okay, 2018 then. I remember there was this huge thought at the time that the pirate quest series was going to go in the way of handling Zaltak because it was thought that he was under the sea there in the pirate lands. But it didn't go that way, and instead we dealt with Zaltak and the I don't know if we say echoes of him, but Zaltak's influence, of course, in ED3 with the Ambassador, and later in the Curse of the Blackstone quest that tied all of the elite dungeons together on that. And I remember at the time people were kind of bummed out that we weren't getting more Zaltak influence, and I feel like aside from the quest that shall not be named that I mentioned a few weeks back on the show, this is an area as well, in addition to that one quest, that people would like to go for towards. I don't know how you feel about that one quest that shall not be named, Avernick.
I don't know which quest you're talking about.
If you say it, it pushes it back by another month.
Oh, interesting.
Only a month, though, so you know.
It was the Big Bird quest that was going to be Mod Raven's quest before he left.
So you're saying that there was a perceived correlation between the two, or just they're both things?
No, I'm saying is that these are two things that people wanted in great detail in the lore communities. Yeah,
I feel like rite of passage is probably sorry.
Just said it.
Shoot. I feel like good. That's probably many reimaginings already and many more down the road if we ever get it. No matter what state it was in or currently is in,
it's, yeah.
Like and, the game's going to change between now and whenever we get it, if we do.
And the reason I mentioned this to bring it all back to Zamarigal is that we had the people talking about Rite of Passage. We had the people talking about Zautak at the end of the day. And those were two things that people want, two threads that people wanted pulled on in great numbers that were never really pulled on. And maybe it was just the way I was looking at and talking to people in the lore community at the time. But now we're potentially looking at maybe pulling on some of those Zautak threads with Zamarigal, and we'll get into why that's the case.
I think we're sort of dealing with different situations here, because Big Bird Quest, that's something specifically that kind of has to be its own area of lore. Like, we're talking about a different planet there entirely.
Yeah, and that's not possible anymore.
It's on season, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Zautak, you can sort of weave carefully into other bits of lore. Like, you've got Piece of Hate, you've got this big spooky black hand just really popping out of the plug hole of the universe. You got all these corrupting influences in the elite dungeons. I think you sort of have to go fairly delicate when it comes to Zautak, because this eldritch Lovecraftian entity thing, you can't really explain it or it loses the mystique, okay? You
That's
can't
the appeal,
just.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't scientifically analyze what exactly is the deal with Zautak. That is the antithesis of an eldritch being like this, eh?
I think that Zautak is our new Zaros. I feel like 10 years ago, Zaros was that, and he got explained. And mystery gone, it's no longer this eldritch being ethereal thing. So
that's
now,
a good way of putting it, and I think that's why people like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now Shane can be into it without feeling too mainstream.
I feel like I agree it's very popular in when's this happening next? Is this gonna be what's next? We've got inklings of that with like Extinction with Erebus, and I feel like Necromancy might like touch on little bits of it, like not explicitly, but if you look around the examines and the areas and the environment, you could probably pick out things. I think it's a card to keep in the back pocket to play 5 to 10 years down the line. Like, we just did Elder Gods, and this is very, very similar.
Oh yeah. So this is definitely planet shattering.
Yeah, this is the thing you weave into every fifth update every once in a while. You say, do you really think you can save them every once in a while? Hey. And eventually it pays off. Like Rodham paid off or something like that. It's gotta be done down. You're right, it's very delicate though. But probably eventually, because it is popular.
All right. Where do we want to start with this one, Questscaping, in terms of the deep dive into everything Zamarigal before we culminate in where we're going to go in Dead and Buried?
Well, let's start at the beginning, because we actually know how Zamarigal was born.
Which is weird for an RS character when you put it that
yes!
way.
Especially once old.
So Margeret Reproduction Lord, they have the ritual of enervation over in Frenesque, because when a mummy Margeret and a daddy Margeret love each other very much, they go and surf some lava and then combine their energy and make a new Margeret, drawing power from an elder god, something along those lines. Except in this case, Zamarigal, whose dad was also named Zamarigal, Yeah, so his mother was badly hurt, and essentially he basically killed both his mother and his father on the way out. And there's a death stone, basically the mental last words of the Margeret who died. There's a death stone for Zamarigal Sr. there, thinking, man, I must have birthed a really powerful Margeret if he's killed both of us. And, well, that remains to be seen.
He's definitely got a junior complex.
Yeah. All right. So Zamarigal also happens to have a couple of family relationships going on with the other Margeret. So our big bad while Gothic sleeps villain, Lucien, he was actually Lucien's cousin. He also happens to be Moya's uncle. So that's a weird little relationship, given that Moya is now top dog in the Zamorakian faction.
I wonder, and, that had to have been planned in terms of her accession there, in terms of where they were going with this, right?
The relationship?
No, just to put her in the top dog position for Zamorakians presently, and then having this next chapter deal with Zamoregal in terms of, as a result of their, or because of their relationship, or in spite of their relationship, I guess.
I wouldn't be surprised if they had thought that Zamoregal would be the villain first, and then tried to set up Legacy of Zamorak to like put the pieces into place, because that felt like a very like move everything where it needs to be for what we want to do next sort of story.
I honestly think Moya is a better big bad than Zamoregal, because Zamoregal is a little bit parody at times, but Moya is the daughter of Lucien. She's sort of the nepo baby. She's got the nepotism behind her. Lucien's already been the big bad. Now we can get the daughter on the stage. I will also say that Zemmerigal's family relationship with Moya is not the cuddliest. Like, Moya already has the deep, deep backstory angst of being the half-human Majorat, and she is not popular for that. And Zamoregal is no exception whatsoever.
One of Azanatra's few failings is also thinking that Moya is an abomination.
Yeah.
It's one unfriendly trait.
Yeah, and I was going to say with that, you know, we're definitely dealing with a very... dare I say it, a set of impure characters here who in their own light, if they were each to have their own quest series, would not have necessarily been the chosen ones. And I think that makes it more interesting at the end of the day for where we're going here.
Yeah, we can really play about with what these characters have going on.
Yeah.
Okay. So Zamoregal, as with the other Majorat, he has a pretty standard history of growing up on Frenniskay, came to Gilenor, brought there by Ictharan, who may or may not be involved in necromancy somehow, you'd think, you'd hope. Ictharan and his sister Amaskut, and employed by the Menophytes as a stern judge, is what they were called. Basically an elite fighting faction. Of course, this did not last very long at all. They ended up, all of them, pretty much, all of them defecting to the Zerosian Empire. And, well, the Zerosians won pretty conclusively and ended up taking over half the world. And Zamoregal in particular was given the rank of Legatus, commander of a legion. So he's a general, not quite the same rank as our Legatus Maximus Zamorak, but under his command. A very military type.
Which is so interesting when you pair this back together, because you know, you would think being involved in that in particular on the betrayal side like that, that you wouldn't necessarily have a positive outcome for that, but the fact he went on and attained that rank, I think, speaks to what he is capable of.
Yeah, a lot of the people involved in the big betrayal, they had some pretty high ranks, and this was not this. We're not dealing with small fry here. Zamoregal was a pretty big cheese back in the day.
Yeah. And, do we know when he started doing necromancy? Like, was that like his selling shtick back then? Or did he figure that out later? Or I don't actually know the answer to that.
Good question. I don't think we do either. He could have just been a big brute force fighting guy.
Right, he could have actually had real living armies.
No, I think it...
Well, if we ever get another lore Q&A, that's a question that could definitely be thrown up there.
Yeah, because I know Mod Jack has these big documents that have been going around for a few years about the composition of the various armies, and it's well known that the Zamorakians would fight with the undead. I'm not sure about the Zerosians.
That seems a little too uncivilized for them, probably.
No, they did have the Cult of Orcus, who was a big old necromancer.
Right, and we never really saw Zemriegel's name in the same sentence as Orcus.
Right,
in archaeology, so I don't know if he was involved in it.
Right, and that's what gives me that exact same thought there, is that typically you would think that those would be partitioned away, but maybe not? I don't know. Anyways, carry on.
Maybe our boy Zemriegel was in it from the start, maybe he was a late bloomer. All right. But yes, so Zemriegel, he was in fact one of the people who was by Zamorak's side as he walked into Zaros' throne room and said, "Get out of here." And yeah, Zaros did in fact get out of here with the help of the staff of Armadil right through him. And that's when Zamorak takes the throne, or rather runs away to Infernus for quite a few years in the first place. So Gilenor at that point was in this weird kind of state where the Zerosian Empire had sort of fallen, but Zamorak himself was off dealing with some demon stuff on Infernus. And in the absence of all this was actually Zemriegel personally defining quite a bit of what came to be known as Zamorakian philosophy. Like, we all know him as the God of Chaos, but there's actually lore books going around saying that, no, that was kind of Zemriegel saying, "Chaos is cool, hey guys, join in the bandwagon."
So in a way, we're still experiencing the essence of Zamorak, even though he's gone, and potentially the way the path is gone would be the same way Zamorak would have charted things if he was still giving the orders from the top here, with Zemriegel doing the same sort of thing here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at this point I ask, that's okay. We're okay with the way things have been going here, and it proves that you don't need gods to be the ones to carry the story forward, I think.
Fair enough, yeah. The gods are essentially just the figureheads of factions, and it's the people involved in driving those factions that are the story that's interesting to focus on, hey?
Exactly. So where do we go from here in terms of, I guess it would be what, the first attack on Varrok? Is that where we go from here?
Yes. Now, it's a bit of a time skip. Zamorakianism has been more or less cohesive or complete chaos over the years, but at this point it seems to have been just Zemriegel personally leading an attack against Varrok, which he's not alone in. Lucien actually did so too at one point.
And I seem to remember us getting some information about that, and I don't remember the quest names, but it was one of the first Lucien quests. Names just on the top of my head. I can't remember it right now.
I feel like the Zemriegel attack, at least, was a lore in histories back in the day, was it not?
Mm-hmm. There's this art on his wiki page of Zemriegel attacking Arav.
Hmm.
In a very old 2008 Laws and Histories art style.
And in a way, it's interesting because we're actually going forward to learn the history of this now, when a lot of this was, you know, just pre-depicted in website entries and stuff before. And you would bet that in the upcoming quests, there's going to be a reference to maybe some of these things in the past. But we might just be providing the information to you guys right now to have the full lore context here. And it goes without saying that attack was unsuccessful because, hey, Varrok is still standing today.
Woohoo!
Yeah, but that's a great source. You're hitting the nail on the head. That's a great source of lore, just to put. It's free real estate. Put the right in game.
Exactly.
Like, why let it go to waste?
Yeah, like it would just be so fun if they could say that and say, this is the way it is, and this is the way we interpreted it, and here's what Zemriegel has to say about this circa whatever year we're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. Really sort of consolidate it, hey?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, so Zemriegel's attack at the time, obviously unsuccessful. He was, in fact, defeated by Arav, who... So the lore of this is that Arav had his big old shield, tossed it away to his grandson, who managed to repel the zombies successfully. But Arav, in particular, was, I think, killed? Well, I think it was, and made into a zombie. But his mind was preserved just so he could feel all the pain as a little bit of a revenge thing, because Zimmer Eagle, bit of a petty guy, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm.
So that's how our boy Arav ends up under Zimmer Eagle's control. Fun times.
But we try again in Defender of Varrok, don't we?
Yes, indeed. So the Defender of Varrok is, in fact, his first actual appearance. And he's building up his army of armored zombies. You actually track down his little base in the wilderness. Got a tracker guy to follow it, to lead you out there. And so this is where you meet Arav yourself and find out about how his mind is intact. And he can actually sort of deliberately reassert himself when Zemo's control is a bit less focused, when he's got a distraction going on. So that ends up very useful for later. Arav is actually on your side and can be even used for good if Zimmer Eagle will stop paying attention long enough.
I just want to say, I feel like this is again another sort of interesting thing that we saw leaned on in Extinction when it came to Carapax slightly wrestling control back from Jazz when he was enslaved by that. And obviously it's not the same mechanic that's involved there in the fact that we're not dealing with an elder god doing it in this case, but it's definitely the same sort of storytelling mechanic going on.
Yeah, that's an interesting tie-in. Like, the control is never absolute.
Keep that strategy in mind going forward.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, and also in this quest is a bit of an iconic RuneScape quest moment where you're uncovering the dwarven city of Kamdazal, you take a peek in the Sacred Forge, have a bunch of basically hallucinations of various Varrok people telling you bits of prophecy information, and then up pops Zimmer Eagle, who has seen you snooping about somehow, and is here to say, hey, what are you doing? Get out of here.
I love this quest when we did this. I remember going through this and seeing that and thinking, you know, that this was, of course, a potential city that would be added to the game. And of course it wasn't, but it was one of those moments where you can kind of look forward and kind of see what could be, right?
Yeah. All those buried cities that RuneScape players want, hey?
But hey, we got Sentistan at the end of the day, so that's fine.
Woo! Yeah. But yes, I think old school RuneScape actually has Kamdazal in some
degree.
Yeah,
they do.
Yay.
Yep. Skilling area.
Woohoo. But yes, so Defender of Varrok leads into the Curse of Arav, which at that point is, we've already done while Gothic sleeps by this point, and we're now building into Ritual of the Marjorat, the really big, big early game Marjorat finale. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, early game, early RuneScape lore, I should say.
the first time we got close to ending the world.
Right. Yeah. And when you say early, I feel like this was also the point in time where we learned that there was going to need to be a ritual for rejuvenation. We just didn't know what that would look like or when that would be quest-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get a lot of characters talking ominously about going north and whatnot.
Yeah, very Mysteries of the Majora sort of set up.
Mm-hmm. And it's really the point in the game at which Zaros is still a mystery, but the Marjorat are also kind of still these mysterious legendary figures. And you can meet them from time to time, but it's always this big dramatic showdown. Like talking to Lucian directly at the Stone of Jazz, that's intense. That feels like anything could happen, hey?
Yeah. And at this point in time, I don't remember the sequence of events on this, but did we know at this point in time around Curse of Arav and whatnot, that the Majorat had a human form in the world? Or did we learn that after the fact?
I don't know. I think Temple of Sintestine came after this, and that's where.
Right. It was at the end of Temple of Sintestine. He tells you to go find him in his human form somewhere. Right.
But there's also Ali the Wise, who has just been, a normal person, Margaret researcher, yeah.
Okay. I'm curious how you guys feel about Zemmerigal in this point in time, like leading up to Ritual Majorat, Curse of Barrow type period, where we know a lot of Majorat. Do we feel like Zemmerigal was ranking among the strongest of them, the weakest of them? Obviously, his reputation since then has become a little bit comedic, but at the time, did he feel like more of a threat?
I think it's safe to say he was no Lucian, but he was up there, and I don't think we really had many that we directly experienced. Like, there was Anakra's Lament, where we basically free Anakra and Akthanakos from being stuck in the desert for thousands of years, and those guys have been pretty weak.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say, going back in time to when this came out, obviously we knew Azanadra from Desert Treasure. Haziel was obvious at that time. And I feel like those were the big ones. And if I go back in terms of what I remember and what I think, I didn't at that point in time, and this might be a different way of looking at it, Zemmerigal did not top that list. Mm. Others like Azanadra, Khazard, Haziel did for me.
Mm-hmm. I will say that a lot of the Majorat that are present at this time are people who you have actively had to free.
Yep.
Like, they were
okay, so
up,
maybe that's why. Maybe that's why I feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he was roaming the world and doing his own thing and wasn't really causing too much of a ruckus except that one time in Varrock.
Yeah.
That one time in Varrock.
Whatever it is. We don't talk about that time.
But otherwise, he's like, you can let him do his thing in the wilderness.
Yep, he's got his zombies, he's happy, whatever he's doing.
Wasn't worth imprisoning.
Hey. So, the Curse of Arav, it's largely a quest about, there's all sorts of fun canopic jars stuff in order to get a mechanism to regain control of Arav once and for all, but in the process of doing this, you actually have to break into Zemmerigal's fortress, which is right by the ritual site, conveniently. And there's all sorts of fun little Majorat backstory you find out here. You find out there was a Majorat named Lammastard who tried tunneling underneath the ritual site in order to get recharged by the ritual but not have to actually be there. And it turns out what he actually did was tunnel directly into Zemmerigal's basement, which was really cool for just having a handy captive to sacrifice at the ritual.
Bad mistake to make.
We needed Maud Blackwitch back in the day for all these. I think you guys know why.
Oh boy.
Just imagine what you could have found in that basement.
Oh, Zemmerigal's stash, hey.
I'm sorry. Continue.
Well, something you do find in Zemmerigal's basement is Zemmerigal's notes, which actually serves as our first introduction to quite a lot of the Majorat. I think it's actually the first direct mention of, like, Sliske in game, which is a big one, hey?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Zemmerigal's notes, you get your very Zemmerigal-flavored opinions on each and every Majorat, and, well, in his case, his entry for himself is, "This is me. I am amazing."
I feel like that one line has spun off into so much of the content we've gotten.
Yeah.
That's definitely inspired the entirety of Dimension of Disaster.
Yep. Meme Skeletal Origins.
And
right,
you know
there.
What the funniest thing about this is that, well, not funniest, but the thing that reigns most pertinent in my head is that this is why people, I think, called this a golden era of questing and lore from While Gothic Sleeps up to Ritual of Majorat, just because of everything we've been discussing here. It did a lot of the same things that the Sixth Age did, but without that world-ending bent to them, I think. If that makes sense.
That's fair.
Tanis, what's your memory of these quests in that era?
I guess it depends on who you are, because if you were a Majorat, your world was pretty damn close to ending, right? I mean, the whole ritual. Yeah, so. No, I mean, I remember these being big, huge milestones that I had to work towards. I remember Ritual of Majorat at the time was kind of, that was the gateway to, you know, the little Glakers. And, yeah. And boots were still relevant, and, you know, you had to get through this content to get to those, you know, best creatures for that.
Yeah.
Do we need more Majorat lore in the game? Specifically around this area up there? I don't know.
I think of all the
like, I feel like
various...
it's been tied off nicely, but there's always so much that could be pulled on in terms of threads and expanded, right?
They're fan favorites. Kind of,
yeah, a little oversaturated, if anything, but they are really, really popular with a lot of the more fan types, hey?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of fan art, a lot of mod Black Witch pinup art.
Maybe a little less quests where there's five of them at a time and, like, sprinkle one in every once in a while.
Yeah. It's so they can be individual powers and not just... It's the same sort of thing where you've got the oversaturation of gods, hey? Mm-hmm. Where they sort of start to stop meaning anything if you've got them all the time. Let's operate on a lower level of power so that these characters are at a near godhood level of power, and that has to mean something, hey?
Yeah, and they're straddling that edge between godhood and not too, which I think is important because at the time you look to the likes of Saradoma and Gothix and Zamorak, and those were still seen as very, very powerful entities and very mystical in a way that the Majorat seemed to be something that was powerful, but we didn't know how close they were to them. And I think that just furthers that interest. But I feel like we're letting our love of this history of this history of lore around this time paint our perspectives on this. And do you guys want to move on to Ritual of the Majorat, or is there anything else in Zamriegel's basement we want to talk about right now?
I don't want to know what's in Zimmerigal's basement, honestly.
Okay.
I'm happy with "This is Meow Amazing." That's my favorite line.
Absolutely. All right. So, Ritual of the Majorat, the big one. So, we have the big old confrontation of, like, every Majorat at the ritual marker. This is it. This is the moment. This is like five Majorat at once, and it's not just the normal thing. This is the culmination of a million different storylines into one. The quest requirements on this baby are massive. Mm-hmm. And you've got Zamriegel kind of having to toe the line with his big cousin Lucien, who is very much domineering this ritual that's going on, to the point where Lucien actually betrays him and pretty much ignores him outright when Zamriegel is getting attacked. And it's at that point that Zamriegel decides to turn on Lucien, and Lucien ends up, well, becoming the scapegoat right up until they present another sacrifice that's a much easier one to make. There's a whole story going on here. But yeah, suffice to say, the cousin relationship is also not a very good one, eh?
Yeah. And I feel like what we're getting at here is that when we look at Zamriegel, it just becomes a mirror, sort of the way of a history of the Majorat. And I think that's fine because as we know here, you know, we're off doing their own things, but Zamriegel definitely has his own style, as we highlighted at the beginning, and I think that's becoming more clear in terms of as we move from Defender of the Rock of Varrock through Ritual of the Majorat here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the Majorat, it really is just sort of endless betrayal, isn't it? That's the name of the game. On large scales, from the Zerosian Empire to the smaller ones, like Zamriegel's not really a family man, is he?
I would say no. I would say no.
No.
I feel
Oh, go on.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
No, I was about to move on. You go.
Oh, I was going to say, I feel like the Ritual of Majorat is probably a good turning point for Zemmerigal as a character, that this is where he starts to get sidelined, because Defender of Barakur's Rob, okay, he's kind of like the main villain for a bit. Now he's starting to be compared to other Majorat, and he's not coming in first. Like we said, he's not first place. And other than Dimension of Disaster, which was a side story, he doesn't have the spotlight basically until now, like till 2023. So like the last 10 years, Zemmerigal's been second, third, fourth place.
Mm-hmm. That is an entirely fair point, yeah, because it is at this point that he just becomes part of the Majorat ensemble cast that gets dragged out every so often, hey.
And that explains why it's so important that the quest coming out next week fulfills everything that he's been up to since and explains why he's doing what he's doing. Because we're looking at this list here, and like you said, Avernick, after this, Into the Sixth Age is what? A little bit in Dishonor Among, or Dimension of Disaster, and that's about it, right?
That was his one standout in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Questscaping. I think you wanted to take us into the Sixth Age at this point.
Not quite yet. I will say that in Ritual of the Majorat, he also loses Arav. Like, Arav finally gets to break free, and there's a little bit of post-quest content where you actually get to put Arav to rest. Like, the guy just finally collapses right there on the ritual site. And, so not even his premium zombie, Zemmerigal, has anymore. He's just got his gargoyle who he can rant at or whatever.
Right. Putting Arav to rest is kind of like permission. Like, okay, the story we were telling you with you is done for now. And it didn't really give him another shtick until much, much later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going into the Sixth Age, I have actually condensed this into a little bit of bullet points. Because he is present during the World Wakes. Mm-hmm. He's one of the guys trying to break into Guthix's tomb. But he is also just one of the boss fights. Like, he's part of an ensemble of characters. Zemmerigal's trying to break in, but also Anakra, General Grador, we've got Kirill Tutsaroth. It's really just a gauntlet of bosses, and he is one of them. And he's not very successful either.
And in some ways that diminishes his character, I think, in terms of what we had been looking at before.
Right.
Yeah.
He's now fightable. Oh. Yeah. I was going to say, he's now fightable. Like, we can hold him off long enough. Like, this is his mortality showing through.
You're certainly not going to be killing him. He's not a small enough character to be just a mini boss who you kill once and for all. He persists after the boss fights, but yeah, he's not particularly hard either. Now, he's also present at Sliskay's Grand Ascendancy, like Sliskay gathering together all the gods just to throw a big show. And he has an interesting point here in that the Majorat were not actually present at World Event 1, which was Saradomin and Zamorak blowing a big hole in Lumbridge together. And Zemmerigal is pretty salty about this, actually. Like, this is the sort of stage where Zemmerigal is genuinely sort of considering going off on his own. Of course, that doesn't happen. What does happen, in this quest at least, is that Zemmerigal sort of bellows some sort of outrage, tries to break into the Grand Ascendancy, and gets slapped aside by one of the Barrows brothers. So that's really a Zemmerigal moment there.
And at this point, I can only imagine what it would feel like if you were a Zemmerigal fan, you know, throughout the pre-Sixth Age period and see just, you know, what this character has fallen to with that, right?
I want to meet that one guy that's the Zemmerigal fan. Like, I want to hold out.
I mean, I'm sure they exist. We got a very wide lore community in the game.
Oh, yeah. So. Someone for everyone.
Yeah.
There's someone with that pin up on their wall.
That is it. Oh boy, that is an interesting thing to point out, though. Like the comedic tone is starting to set in.
It really is
at this point. The "this is me, I'm amazing" is really like coming to bite him in the butt.
That one line
it really sets some things off.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dishonor Among Thieves 2015, what we've got here is really a Zamorakian focus quest. We've got Zamorak ascending a big old heist squad to go steal the Stone of Jazz.
They wanted to be this to be like an Oceans movie.
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. And it is, I think pretty much every character involved gets a good showing here. Like, this is probably not so much a comedic Zimmer Eagle moment. Like, he has his skills, as is part and parcel of being part of a heist crew, hey?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what the sad part is? I don't remember what his role was in this quest.
Oh, dear.
I think he portaled away zombies while we were opening the vault. That was the entire role.
Okay. We can see where that might go with the necromancy-related thing, then. That's right. Interesting.
He was combating Sliske's whites with portal.
Yes. A little bit of portal magic. Hey, I swear he also does that in Dimension of Disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Portals. Something to keep in mind. All right. Speaking of Dimension of Disaster, that came out about a month later. And that, woof. I think it's definitely the most prominent piece of semi-recent Zimmer Eagle content.
Yeah.
But wow. Yeah, so this is very much an alternate universe Zimmer Eagle, and it's one who's successfully ruling Varuk. Woohoo! But it's also a Zimmer Eagle who has big, goofy statues of himself doing finger guns.
Right, and this is one thing I questioned at the time this came out, was whether or not it was okay for the character to go in this direction. And of course, it's an alternate universe, RuneScape's mirror universe, I guess you could say, in that regard. And the way I took this as a player at the time was just to have this quest be more of a thing for comic relief and celebrating the 200th quest.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also worth noting that this was RuneScape's 200th quest, and it was a special quest, like the multi-part deal. They took a quest series to represent RuneScape questing, and it was Zimmer Eagle's series.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think makes sense, because if you look at what RuneScape's iconic cities are, there you have a choice between Varrok and Falador, right?
Fair enough. I guess with Falador, you don't really have as many really notable characters.
That would be the Temple Knights.
Mm-hmm. You have Satifi, but you can't really do... Well, quest series centered around his park bench, eh?
That you can sit on now.
Hey! You can sit on him as well.
Yep.
But yes, I think Zimmer Eagle was probably the right choice to go with here. It's a good, compact, little series of quests, redone, revamped a little bit. And there's undead cows in the boss fight, which is a choice.
Yeah, I absolutely love Dimension of Disaster. I thought it was a great reimagining of a couple of quests. Yes, Zimmer Eagle is super, super goofy. But I also feel like the story that near the end that Arav gets with finally getting to confront Zimmer Eagle and take him on himself. Like, you don't actually fight Zimmer Eagle on this one. Like, it's you controlling Arav doing it. And I feel like that was a really strong second go at a send-off, whereas in Ritual of the Majra, it was kind of like a post-quest little achievement thing.
This okay, that's like, a good point.
Arav got his go at it.
That's a good point. Sure, that's a good point. Because I was just thinking on this, in terms of like the Zimmer Eagle send-off, you mentioned that we probably didn't just have that at the end of Ritual of the Majorat, whereas here we could, in Dimension of Disaster, got to dive a little bit deeper into it. And I was thinking on this, while you guys were discussing this, that on its own, Dimension of Disaster would make for a good RuneScape book or movie.
Fair enough, honestly.
Yeah, it's good. It's solid, beginning to end.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe I have a renewed reason of things to look for and go back for when I actually go and finish all the content in Mirror Varrok, because I haven't done that as part of the Master Quest stuff yet. So,
oh, boy.
There's a lot of replaying to be done, hey?
I know. That's
why
I have.
You'll probably like it the first or second time you redo it.
Yeah.
After that.
I know. And that's why I haven't gone back yet.
Yeah, neither have I.
Okay.
Well, for now, Our next quest along the list is Children of Mar. That was around the end of 2016 when he had this big old build-up to Sliske's Endgame was our finale of the week. Well, finale of the era, I should say.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so Children of Mar, you have another Margaret ritual, and Zemmereagle is just an absolute pain the entire time. Good God, this man. So you're traveling with your cool buddy Karshai. He's a neutral Margerat. He's big and fluffy. He's a Viking and he can drink like anything. Woohoo! We love our boy Karshai, and you get up to Frenisgate with him, and there's all these lava falls that, well, Karshai was going to teleport you over them, but instead Zemmereagle pops up, kidnaps Karshai, takes him as a hostage, and leaves you to surf the lava falls on your own.
Oh God, what is happening here at this point, I was thinking.
Zemmereagle making your life difficult is what.
Yeah, and once again, not the impact that he had on story pre-Sixth Age, and this is the recurring trend.
Mm-hmm.
It's very plot device.
Yeah, he's more, he's less big bad villain and more petty annoyance at this point.
Which, when you look at everything pre-Sixth Age and what we talked about, is that doing justice for the character? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, forward by quite a bit at this point. We did kind of have a bit of a lore dead spot for a while after 2016 died down.
A huge gap.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a bit till desperate times.
Yeah, to the point where we are, in fact, fast-forwarding to about 2021 by this point.
Mm-hmm. And this is a Carfrant Centistan. Like, mm-hmm. Wow.
Elder God Wars Dungeon. Here we go. So, Zemmereagle, long time no see. Hello. He is there, holding his arms up really high and doing that big bad necromancy thing.
The dance.
Mm-hmm. The dance.
We too can learn that dance. Oh boy, so, necromancy dance off. Is that the quest finale?
Yeah, yeah. And the other question I had at this point, and I think I mentioned it to one of you guys when we were building the show here, is that wasn't there some questions when the Zekar front launched if what he was doing was healthy and was going to pose any problems in the future here with this?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the point of the Hetz, Eye of Het quest was that this we're trying to find a thing that's not necromancy.
Bingo.
Specifically. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, we resorted to it for this point, but let's try to undo that. Let's try to stop.
Yeah. This is desperation point. This is, we do not want to be even touching this. But meanwhile, Zemmereagle is the guy you gotta call if you want a whole lot of zombies all at once.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Woohoo! Brute force! And no tactics, just throwing zombies at it again and again, which is basically what the front was at this point.
Yeah. And that's what it got to, and we realized that, you know, they needed to do something on that. And I think we took a break for Christmas at that point in time, and we recorded that episode about how the Elder God Wars was going to end, and none of us really predicted the way they were going to go. This isn't an Elder God Wars podcast, but we did do Lore Diggers at the time for that, in terms of just looking at everything that was happening at the time and whether or not there was another way forward. And once again, I'm going to keep saying this, diminished impact for Zemmereagle. Again,
he's a cameo.
And again.
Totally a cameo at this point.
Yeah.
Just one of many faces on the front, hey?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then Legacy of Zamorak? I mean, that was recent. That was last year. We had thoughts he was going to be appearing in here, but at the same time, not doing the character justice just yet, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the recovery point, right?
Like, yeah, it's where it starts.
He was diminished to cameo, and now he's kind of like has speaking lines, and he's featured as like as a prominent point of like the final cut scene where he is singled out and made more relevant by now being skeletal again. Like it's putting him in a place where now in 2023 we can see, okay, they were trying to like put him in a spot where he can be important again.
Mm-hmm. And this is really where the good old family relationships are coming into play again. Like, Moya is officially top dog. She has maneuvered her way into the top position, and she is not happy with her uncle throwing a tantrum about it. Yeah, like, she is the one who just blasts him aside and turns him skeletal all over again.
I think that turning him skeletal again is purely an aesthetic move. Like, let's make him look like a badass necromancer.
That's actually a good point, because the looks before that really wouldn't fit within what is necromancy, right?
It was also the iconic Majrat look before Ritual of the Majrat, because up until their ritual, they were all decaying and really sort of gaunt-faced, skeletal, bony. And that was iconic to RuneScape lore big bad villains for quite a long time. So it's interesting that there's a deliberate return to that aesthetic, hey?
Yeah.
And then That's a good point, but I just want to be cautious about maybe reading too much into that. But I guess we'll find out next week, won't we?
Yeah, see how much of a big villain he actually is, eh?
Yeah.
All right. So Murder on the Border is where it becomes almost entirely clear. Like, I remember on the podcast we did for this that there was a letter Z being signed on this letter, the orders to the assassin, and we were pretty much thinking that's got to be Zemmereagle, hey?
You were thinking that. You were thinking that.
Okay, were there any other guesses?
Well, I mean, it just happened to be at a time when there was, you know, an army marching in Eastern Europe that also signed their tanks with the letter Z on it, too. God.
Are you saying it's Russia signing these assassin orders?
I'm just saying that was something else that came up in chat. At some point with that.
Oh, dear.
But obviously, well, Zemmereagle in this case.
Yes. In the universe. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Sorry for derailing you. But Murder on the Border, obviously. And I go back to this where I feel like it was kind of foreshadowed in Succession based on what we talked about with that quest. I don't know that you were available for that one, Questscaping. It might have been a scheduling thing. You might have been away for that. But I feel like we also had a discussion about Zemmereagle in Succession and the fact that there was rumblings of necromancy on the way with that. And I think it, Tanis, do you remember if it was... I think it was just Thaxi on that episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
And it was he who made the connection to Zemmereagle and what could potentially be going on with that. So,
cool.
It obviously carried on, and we got the confirmation in Murder on the Border. And unwelcome guests, I feel it's obvious, with that big door in the wilderness. In the crypt.
Yep, he's right there.
So. Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are today, unless there's anything about the door, the risen ghosts, or the phantoms that you guys want to talk about that links to
it. There's not really much to go on in unwelcome guests, honestly. He is a bit of a stock villain, but it's also not very much content. Not yet.
I feel like him being a stock villain is absolutely to his benefit for being chosen for this role, though, because in this world where we're building a storyline that's not dependent on the Elder God Wars and everything that come before it, stock villain is villain of the week type feel is kind of what you want to get people on board.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough.
And it also makes it easier for writing, too, going into Dead and Buried.
So So I guess in that sense, Zemmereagle is a fairly good choice in that he's not particularly world-ending. He's city-threatening, but he's also not... It's not killing gothics, you know?
Yeah, we're not going back to that level at this point.
No.
So. Okay. Right. Okay. Anything else history-wise we want to talk about before where we go with Dead and Buried, specifically that one key point? Where we were thinking on here. I feel like what we have done is we've done a really, really great job illustrating that pre-Sixth Age, this character had depth and he was being used a lot. But post-Sixth Age, he kind of just faded to the background to the point of almost becoming irrelevant until they start adding influences back to him last year and making him the central point in our current storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And
feels accurate.
I feel like that's the way quests are going to go in the future, is that this is what they're going to do when they want to move a storyline character or storyline forward. They're going to pick a character and just go with that and its surrounding area. In the same way that, you know, and I always point this out, that if people wanted a gnome finale, this is likely the same way they would do gnomes. They would just pick a character in that area that would be tangentially and directly related to gnomes, much like how Zamarigal is related to the Majorat, but also to the undead with necromancy that we have coming up soon. And that's the way you do these sorts of storyline connections with that. Mm-hmm. Tanis, any questions before we go on to what happens with Zamarigal here in Dead and Buried?
No, I think I'm ready to find out or speculate what we're, we're going to get.
Yeah. Hey. All right.
Predict it accurately.
Yeah. So questkeeping, right. I'm going to leave this one to you because this was your find, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So I found in As an Adra's quest a rather interesting little line about Zamarigal using Blackstone for necromancy. And we know Blackstone is bad news, but what we also know, because they've been very tight-lipped on the promotion for this quest, haven't they? It's basically just the rewards we know about and pretty much one single screenshot of involvement with a Dragonkin tomb. Yeah. That's what Zamarigal's found up in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm thinking the Dragonkin and Blackstone connections, like, yeah.
Dragonkin plus Blackstone equals?
Yeah, we got Zaltak going on here, I think. At least some sort of rumblings of Zaltak.
Now, do you think it's going to be just a reference off to the side? Do you think it's going to be some sort of echo of it? Because I remember there being a discussion, I don't know if it was at a RuneFest or an Alora Q&A, that at the time they felt like most of what they wanted to do with Zaltak was done in terms of handling it with the Ambassador and Curse of the Blackstone.
I think that might even have been a podcast episode when we had the J-Mods on talking about how Zaltak is a bit of an abstract villain to have, hey?
Okay.
Yeah, but I think at the very least, we have a Dragonkin tomb and we have Zamarigal, a character who uses Blackstone for necromancy completely obliviously and has stumbled across something that he is now using to summon up vast armies that you need an entire fort to deal with. And I'm thinking, so there's a few specific Dragonkin connections to Blackstone. We could be stumbling on something either associated with Kerepak, who, for what it's worth, has kind of had his time. He's been a boss monster in the Elite Dungeons. He's had his story conclusion. And for what it's worth, if you go into the Elite Dungeons lore, he didn't mess with Blackstone very
God
long.
God Wars Dungeon, you mean? Or Elite Dungeon?
Elite Dungeon.
Okay.
Because that's where his involvement with the Blackstone comes from. You see him messing about with Blackstone long enough to create the Blackstone Dragon, and then something happens which makes him regret everything, seal the dungeon up, and that's the state you discover it in. Kerepak has basically disowned this entire line of research. Mm. So either we're looking at something Kerepak has also sealed up, is my thinking, or
is that what's behind the door?
Could be. The other thing is potentially it's something to do with Kranon, who is the ambassador, and whose connection with the Blackstone is very much he decided to start messing with it. He continued messing with it. He did not stop. He ended up warping into this wild eldritch being. And if you've done ED3, you can see the sort of state he's in as the final boss. Yeah. He is not recognizable as a Dragonkin anymore. So he definitely has the strongest Blackstone connection out of any Dragonkin. So perhaps it is something somehow to do with him. Or perhaps there's some entirely different Blackstone connection going on here.
Personally, for me, I would prefer the idea of a second Dragonkin tomb, but I don't necessarily know that they would go down that path. personally, for me, given the way the lore has been going, I think they're going to do something more tangential to the Blackstone connections, because I think they would be remiss if they didn't at that, because what you found in As an Audra's Quest is a very clear reference to necromancy on that. And maybe if it's not touched in this, maybe it will be touched in one of the necromancy quests or a piece of future lore. Those sorts of things do tend to happen in this game, where players keep talking about certain things and we will them into existence and whatnot. That happened with archaeology mysteries and the like. So and later with the Inquisition in the Sentistan site, right? So
yeah. But no matter what, I think what we have here is there is a piece of foreshadowing in As an Audra's Quest that says that connects Zemiregal, Blackstone, and necromancy. And yeah, we have some kind of Dragonkin involvement going on here, and whether that's something existing or something brand new, we will see.
Avernick, which side are you on? Where do you think there's this a Zemiregal Blackstone connection? What could it be, or do you think something else on this?
I have thought about this quite a bit. I feel like yes. The tomb probably has something to do with necromancy. I mean, we know where the game is going forward. And Dragonkin have done necromancy in the past. But my question then is, Zemiregal is good at necromancy, so what does he need from a tomb of maybe draconic necromancers, right? So is he trying to necromance dragons? Is that where it's going? Like, were they particularly good at that? Like if he needs something from a Dragonkin tomb, either it's like something like so deep necromancy that even Zemiregal doesn't know it, or it's something more specific along Dragonkin draconic lines.
Oh, that's interesting.
So like, you're not trying to resurrect a dragon? I don't know.
So you're not really connecting it with Blackstone at all then?
I think Blackstone's kind of like just like the basis for where a lot of this necromancy stuff comes from. Like, you're
that's
right,
fair.
That's not just quest. Yeah, it seems like the Zemiregal's basis for necromancy understanding is that he uses Blackstone as a catalyst. And obviously, Crandon did as well. So I guess I'm just thinking like a step further. Like, yeah, so is Blackstone, why is it? Is it Blackstone from Dragonkin?
Fair enough. What if they pull another Hero's Welcome on us?
A total 180.
Yeah, kill another god?
No, god killing. Just, like, you know, advertise the quest as something, but it turns out to be something else entirely.
So Zemiregal quest turns into Dragon King quest, hey?
Well, not necessarily Dragon King. I feel like that's done, but it's advertised as Zemiregal, but it becomes our introduction to necromancy, saying, you know, effectively saying, hey, in 2 weeks, you got to pick up these threads right here.
Yeah, I don't think Dragon can appear in the quest. I feel like that's kind of like jumping the gun for the storyline.
Just sort of the setting, hey?
Yeah, the setting, probably. That sort of thing.
I'm curious what this crypt is going to be like, because is it going to be like a really small area that we're in for 10 minutes, or is it going to be like a dungeon that we, like the quest for 2012, where we were in a cave the entire time, is like this big sprawling puzzle thing?
It's been a while since we've had a puzzle quest.
I think they were talking about some sort of puzzle aspect.
They asked for the word puzzles, and I don't know if you guys spotted in the blog that it said that you get to control the raptor for part of it.
Uh-huh. Oh.
So that's pretty good for in a cave type gameplay.
And the raptor did get a graphical update with this quest.
Yeah. Closer to the player skeleton, yep.
Yeah, so we'll have to worry about whether or not there's more of those character kind of control things like that, because we have had a mixed history with that, but that's mechanics for next week.
I'm sure. I think my biggest question going into this is, what is Zemiregal's goal, and how does looting a Dragonkin tomb help?
Right, and that's when you put it in that frame, that's why I think the Blackstone stuff is going to be tangential. For me personally,
it's going to be the tools. Yes.
Yes.
It's going to be referenced, and we're going to do the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at it meme. Like, it's Blackstone. and we get it, but it's also going to work really well as still like an introductory storyline where you don't really need to know that
Bingo.
It has this intense history, but it is what it is.
Right. And then your guy's last point here is Zamriegel working for Moya, which adds another depth based on everything we've discussed so far in this Lore Digger special here.
I really think if he's working for Moya in any degree, it's reluctantly.
Mm-hmm. I've seen this question a lot. I think I added this one in. It feels like, again, this would be a tangential thing. Like, this would be like a hinted at thing. If it was, it'd be like we'd find a note that's signed M, right? But I feel like a big point of Legacy of Zamorak was setting up our rogues gallery, and this is kind of like the first taste of it.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, I can get behind that.
And maybe 2 years down the line, we're fighting off someone else from the gang, but this is our Zamriegel storyline. And so I think he is working for Moya. I have definitely seen it floated around. People are like, are we going to help him betray Moya or stab it because he's salty about what happened in Succession? But I threw this question in there, like, just like to think about like the storyline even broader than Dead and Buried. It's like, what's the point of Zamriegel doing what he's trying to kill Roald and looting a Dragonkin tomb? And then what does that mean for who's telling him to do that? Is he doing it to against someone, for someone, stuff like that? That's kind of where I'm going into this quest thinking.
Yeah, and you raised that key point as well with this, is that when you start, you know, lining everything up, there's the fact you recently tried to hire Bianca to murder King Roald.
Right, it seems like he's going after Mistalyn again, Varrok specifically.
And maybe not directly this time, right?
Right, maybe he's trying to resurrect some horror to go after it.
Actually, now you mention it, the approach of assassinating King Roald is not a very Zamriegel thing to do, because we have basically spent this entire segment saying Zamriegel is brute force, he is a blunt instrument, he does not send assassins to go kill major players. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more Moya than Zamriegel, this part of the plan.
Yeah, that definitely could be. It's Zamriegel says, Moya tasks Zamriegel with destabilizing Mistalyn and
is he doing this on his own accord? Is he getting paid for it? What?
I don't think payment would do it for him. I wonder if maybe he's holding like power over his head, like I can unskeleton you. Something like that.
Oh, that's interesting.
We have a very frustrated Zamriegel who is having to dance to someone else's tune for the meantime. Mm-hmm. But I think constantly ongoing throughout all this, he will probably be trying to think of an escape plan, because mm-hmm. this is not his ideal situation by any means.
Right.
What if they end the quest with a moment where he is able to escape like that and he just disappears, poof, like the likes of Zaros and Char and whatnot have disappeared, and he becomes a character that is, in effect, put somewhere for storage for later and is not going to be a factor going forward. And I don't think there's that many Zamriegel fans out there that would be upset about that, though given the game, there probably are a couple. I foresee that as another outcome they could go for too here.
I would be surprised if that happened, because I feel like a lot of effort has gone into putting him in a position to be our villain right now, and I do not think that we've gotten more than a waving at him across a lava chasm so far. I think that he's probably here for obviously this coming quest, but probably the necromancy segment of whatever comes next. I think that necromancy, one of the lines that was said in the lore video today was, in order to defeat a necromancer, you have to use their power against them, otherwise they'll just revive themselves. And I feel like a big portion of us learning necromancy and where that factors into this storyline is that we have to use it against Zamriegel to actually stop him for real.
Okay. So maybe then the culmination of necromancy is that we stop him. And this is one step along the way, maybe.
A little bit of learning on the job as we go.
Yeah,
I'll definitely factor it at some point.
Okay. Well, we are pushing the past an hour point on the Zamriegel segment on its own. So that's at this point, I'll ask you guys if you guys have any closing thoughts or remarks on Zamarigal, and we'll just go around the table for this. We'll start with you, Avernick.
Zamarigal is a super fun character that I think they can do a lot of campy things with, as long as they toe the line of cheesy and antagonistic well.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And, you know, I feel like there was a point in RS Quest not too long ago where they kind of got that line mixed up a bit, and I feel like it's been better recently. With the exception that I think the biggest complaint point around the Legacy of Zamorak season was that we were just observers in it. So, and then you work that out, then you get to a point where that's being managed effectively. All right. Questscaping?
Yeah, I'm going to say that thinking along those lines that we have ourselves one cheesy campy villain here, I think actually, given that we were looking earlier at the characters that are associated with necromancy in the tutorial stages, we have Malignus Mortifier who summons up mushrooms all over the place. We have a skeleton with goggles. Demerigal kind of fits into this rogues gallery pretty well, while also having some villain cred behind him. It's not a bad fit.
Yeah, it's not a bad fit that you would end the Ford 4 and 3 season with that and kick Zamarigal off to be used in necromancy then. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Tanis?
You know, it's funny. I'm glad we had this episode of Lore Diggers because going, you know, before we got that drop today, I would have thought that Zamarigal was the original necromancer, right? Like, that's who I would have thought from the beginning, and now as we see his history, I'm really intrigued to see how, or even if, it's gonna intertwine in the larger story.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, I think the biggest thing is that we're finally getting to use or maybe even flesh out a bit of the character that was getting so much attention pre-Sixth Age and obviously had a lot going for him. And, you know, like you said, just became a background character in the Sixth Age questscaping, I think you said. I think the most important thing going forward is that we're actually going to start to see some of that now. And we knew it was him with Murder on the Border, things being signed Zed and whatnot. But to see that come to a conclusion in a relatively short time span from the start of Ford 4 and 3, I think can only be a good thing for keeping the lore moving forward, and it creates a dynamic character without, of course, as we said, having the need to resort to the gods and such, which is where we were at a couple years ago. So, alrighty, folks, hopefully you guys enjoyed that, and we'll be back next week with, of course, the full RSVMB update quest week experience on Dead and Buried. But before that, we have our achievements of the week and pick of the week. So starting off on the 11th, we have our very own Lord Earth with 99 mining on July 11th, 82nd Airborne with 120 Constitution on the 10th, Terry Dax with 99 fishing also on the 10th, and Todio22 with 99 archaeology on the 10th.
And we had a Nyard with 99 fishing on July 9th. The Outdoors with 120 magic on July 9th as well. And Lord Earth with 99 woodcutting on July 8th.
Right on.
All right. And on July the 7th, we had I Like Slayer with 120 archaeology, Niard with 99 dungeoneering, and Ozazoyo with 120 construction.
All right. And then moving on to the 6th, we have Rizzy with 99 Hunter. We have Robosaur Rex, awesome, with 120 Agility, also on the 6th. And Shamrock Soup with 120 Invention, also on the 6th.
Nicely done, everybody. And of course, as we say, calm before the double XP storm happening at the end of July this time because of necromancy. So keep that in mind, everybody. I know normally it's August, but we're looking at July for this one.
Coming.
All right. Pick of the week. Avernick, you have a pick of the week, and you had Tanis jumping up and down in pre-show about this one. So what is it?
Yeah, a new Brandon Sanderson book came out this week, or is available for purchase this week. I picked it up on Tuesday. It's called Yumi and the Nightmare Painter. It is a part of a larger series called The Cosmere. It's in a universe with a lot of other series and books, but this one's quite standalone. I really enjoyed it, particularly because of the setting. The story is about these two people on two different worlds who are mysteriously connected, and they have to figure out why and what to do with that as they try to navigate each other's world. But the settings were quite striking and imaginative. One character on like a desolate planet with where the surface burns everything that touches it, kind of like a traditional Korean spiritual sort of environment. The other character in a more like a planet where it's like eternally night and everything is lit up by neon, and it's more like a modern Japan sort of area, and they're both trying to figure out how the other world works and what they have to do and why they were stuck together. It's a fantasy novel. Brandon Sanderson is known a lot for his hard magic systems. This one's probably a bit softer than usual, but there's definitely a lot to dig into with the plot pretty concretely revolving around the mechanics of the world and things like that. I really liked it. I picked it up on Tuesday and I finished it Wednesday, which is quite fast for me. I thought it was really engaging. Definitely worth the read or listen if you're an audiobook person, I think.
Right on. Tanis, why were you jumping up and down about this?
I mean, I love Brandon Sanderson. I'm a huge Stormlight Archive fan. Love The Wheel of Time. I mean, I've just enjoyed everything I've ever read of his, and so this was exciting. And of course, the first thing I did was go to Audible and see if it was there. It's not there yet, but I'm sure it will be very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I picked it up off of. He has a publishing company called Dragon Steel, and I got it off there, and they gave me a download for an ebook and a Spotify code. It's definitely possible to grab it right now. It's just a little less distributed currently. They're kind of keeping it a bit in house.
Oh, very cool.
Nice. All right. What have we been up to on RS? Let's go to you first, Questcaping.
I have been moving in real life and not had much time for RS, but certainly catching up on all the... Well, it's unwelcome guests I've got to catch up on this point. I've read along with the transcript.
Yeah.
And I think what I have to do really is catch up on my fort, because I don't necessarily need it, but it is
you're
a really nice
You're
going to
need some Elden Logs.
Poor boy.
And you're going to need to spend some time in front of the tree getting an Incando pick hatchet.
No stopping the chopping.
I love that. I love that. Stop at the chopping. All right. Sounds good. How about you, Abernick?
Last weekend, I finished my Slayer Codex for the first time.
Phantoms
gave me the biggest pain. I was like 5 times over drop rate on their soul, which was really... I'm not the best, so I was fighting them one at a time. It was kind of slow. But finally got there, and now I'm kind of eyeing up my other trim requirements and trying to figure out which one seems the least painful. Honestly, right now, Damarak statue seems the least painful.
Makes sense.
I could grind that out.
Yeah, fair enough. That makes sense. And that's so interesting. You know, we get people on from all walks of RuneScape life, you being in the lore community. Eventually everybody ends up at trim. It's just a question of when, Tanis, right?
So slow.
You're going to get there one day.
Maybe.
What have you been doing, Tanis?
I've been prepping for double XP. And by that, I have been making elder frames, chopping elder logs, doing all of the things. So far, I think I'm about at 4K elder frame. So we'll see how long that will last. I'm not really sure.
I don't think it'll last very long.
To do.
Yeah.
I don't think so either, but you know what? It took an extremely long time to make them.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
It's going to be interesting to see where everything in that economy settles after double XP and people get into the new construction training metas that landed as a result of that.
Yeah.
Well, as for me, I shook off the PVM rust. Folks might not be aware, from the Elder God Wars to the end of last year, thereabouts, I was doing pretty much Reaper tasks every day, going for raids every reset, but I kind of let that fall off around Halloween last year, and I really hadn't touched PVM since then. I shook off the rust this week on normal Karapank because I realized that, you know, I'll be doing a lot of combat when it comes to necromancy. So I did that. I started off, my old personal best was 219 normal mode Karapank. I started off at 310, coming back to it. Mm. Almost a minute slower. But I got myself all the way down, reattuned myself to it, and I am back down to a new personal best of 2 minutes and 2 seconds there. Wow. On normal mode.
Nice.
So my next step is to try hard mode now that I have a magic setup, because in my old PVM run last year and through Elder God Wars, I was only using ranged, believe it or not, and I didn't really have a magic setup that was perked and ready to go, but I have that now, so I'm going to dive into some hard mode Karapank probably over the weekend using magic and see where that lands, just to kind of get a feel for things and see what I can do with that, and who knows, maybe at some point I'll end up going for Time Weaver title and farm my own Fractured Staff, given the apparent RNG that I have in game that everybody always highlights for some reason.
We'll have to bury it to PVM.
Yeah. So that's what I've been up to. I don't think there's much else to say. In my AFK time, I've been semi AFK time, given the fact it's the accidental skilling place. I've been gathering sharp shell shards for double XP to use for fire making. I'm going to get 120 fire making on double XP, I decided.
Oh, fab.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice. Burn, baby, burn.
And this is going to do one of two things, Tanis. It's going to make me either not do any more 120s, or it's going to make me go for 120 all.
The breaking point.
Exactly. How do you feel about 120 all, Avernick, given the fact it's virtual and whatnot, mostly?
I don't initially like the idea of it, but I realize that over time it slowly motivates me.
Right.
I definitely like when I'm doing something to be working towards multiple goals at once, and that's just another one I can throw on the list of, oh, if I'm doing this, I'm at least working towards 120.
All right.
I don't have many virtual 120s, but
fair someday. Enough. Fair enough. You're going for trim and whatnot. That's completely okay. So.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, that wraps up this edition of RSBNB Update. We'll be back next week, as we mentioned, for Quest Week, discussing Dead and Buried. Of course, as well, you can get Update delivered automatically to you on whatever your favorite podcast listener is. That's a very important thing to do with podcasts. You can find it at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Stitcher, pretty much any podcast listener out there. And we also publish on YouTube as well, youtube.com/RSBNB. And if you like the show, give a like and subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast listener if that supports it. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Avernick, thank you for joining us. It was great having you.
Thanks for having me.
Questscaping, same to you as per usual.
Thank you very much.
And Tanis and I will be back next week. So see you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Bye.